Texas Values Report. This is Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values. Great to be with you on another glorious week in the state of Texas. We are in the first week of March. A lot of interesting things going on. It's spring. I might actually take a little bit of time off after a busy week and a busy couple of weeks. And so we'll see how that goes. Always got to work in some leisure time. You know, kids these days, right? They have a spring break, and we don't. But and now every now and then, that allows us to indulge in some of that ourselves, though, and have a good reason to get out there. And so, I'm certainly going to be doing that soon, but not without recapping some interesting events in the state of Texas this week, and not just for Texas. There's no doubt some of the things that happened from our election, the primary elections on Tuesday, have national implications. Some of that is because of the impact on what happened in the presidential race, not just for Texas, but through across the country, but certainly a lot of following on how that impacts not only our state, but things across the country, some congressional races and a lot of good stuff. And so I'm glad I've got some help today to cover a lot to talk about and really some interesting things to discuss. And some of these races are not settled. There's still a lot of drama, if you will, that's going to play out between now and the end of May. Matt Makowiak's going to be our guest today on the Texas Values Report. It's good to have him back on. You may be familiar with him. He runs an organization called Potomac Strategy Group right here outside of or from the city of Austin. He has had probably two decades, if not more, in the field of law and policy and politics at the federal level. He's worked for elected officials. He's been running his organization for quite some time and has done a lot of political consulting. And he is a fellow graduate of the University of Texas. We'll get into some of that as we finish things. Matt, welcome to the Texas Values Report. All right, I'm not hearing you.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's
Thank
good.
You, Jonathan. It's great to be with you.
That's good.
Thanks for having me back.
You bet. And by the way, I have verified Matt is not driving. He's in a vehicle, but he's not. I had a guest recently that was in a car. I was like, okay, we need to stop the show. All right, so listen, good to have you on. I just took some time to catch my breath yesterday. I had driven back from Fort Worth in the middle of the night, literally leaving an event that Cheryl Bean was having, which probably a race not people are talking about as much. I think it's got some really good implications for a variety of reasons. But let's start with the top of the ticket, if you will, when it comes to the big election results from Tuesday. For the rest of the people out there that are not used to this cycle, we had a primary election, Democrats, Republicans, some big races. Now this sets up where things are going on for November. But we know, Matt, a lot of these races, how the primary plays out, tells the story of how things are going to go in November, or largely. But a lot of things were focused on Governor Abbott getting involved in a lot of Republican primary races in, you know, specifically challenging some incumbents, which we don't see very often, centered around the school choice. Is it fair to say of a lot of our statewide leaders, Governor Abbott is the one that had the best night on Tuesday?
It is, and that's an objective, analysis. When you look at the races that different statewide officials got involved in, the capital that they invested, the time they invested, the political capital they invested, the governor had the most at stake in the primary election on Tuesday night, and he had the best night by far. This started, Jonathan, as you know, because the Texas House came 11 votes short of passing the educational savings account bill in the special session in November. And the governor was deeply frustrated with that result. As you know, the ESA bill or some variation of it has passed the Senate several sessions. It's fallen short in the House, mostly because of House rural House Republicans. And so he kind of decided he had enough. And so he went out and raised, you know, somewhere between $5 and $10 million. He got engaged in a ton of these races, did multiple events for the challengers. In the end, it appears they picked up 9 of the 11 votes they needed on Tuesday night, and now they only need to win 2 of the 6 that are going into runoffs in the Texas House.
Well, look,
Tuesday night was an earthquake.
No, yeah. That'll be our meme, by the way. That'll be our quote from Matt when we put up some highlights on this show a little bit later, that Tuesday night was an earthquake. Good job. I love that. Thanks for setting me up well. You know, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday or last night. Even if the numbers are not quite there, I mean, arguably they will be or they are, as far as to have enough votes for school choice in the House moving forward. You have to imagine this sends a message to some of those other Republicans that maybe survived a challenge at the primary or, you know, whatever the case may be, that as they come back, or others, hey, you know, you don't want to be in the crosshairs next time around. And so I would imagine, you know, some school choice votes are picked up by nature of the fear factor and the results factor of what happened. I don't think a lot of people would have expected that, or I'll say it's a maybe unusual. I thought that it was certainly possible, but I thought, you know, as much as Governor Abbott had the big win, if you will, on Tuesday night, he had the most to lose. I mean, he took some really big risk, in my opinion, and I'm not sure saying they weren't calculated and he didn't have good reason to do that, but I mean, he spent a lot of time focusing on school choice and then to have several special sessions and still come up short, I can imagine there was a lot of frustration on his part, and then to get into the election cycle. So if he had not won some of these races, you know, you would have, people would have sort of been doubting his political power and clout. I didn't. I was hoping it would work out this way, but what an incredible confirmation. And I'll tell you, because look, there was the Paxton issue, right? The revenge tour that Paxton was on because of the impeachment votes and all that. And so some people were saying, oh, that's going to be a big factor. I certainly thought that when the governor gets involved in a race, and then on the issue of school choice, that's where things were a lot of strong. Because I don't have $5 million like the governor does, and a lot of candidates don't, to get involved, or even consultants or PACs. And so that money and influence, he was not running for re-election. A lot of things that factored into it. But yes, some of these races are going to a runoff, so they're not done yet, but certainly head in the right directions. Let's talk about the speaker, though, okay? So not only was Speaker Phelan pushed to a runoff, he didn't get the most votes. I mean, I think, was it 46, 42? I forget the final numbers.
46, 43.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, so he's the second place finisher. And I personally, you know, full disclaimer, David Covey's brother works for us, Jonathan Covey. Now, RC4 did not endorse in the race. But, you know, I saw Phelan put out a statement that sounded like, you know, he was sort of acting like he was victorious just because he made the runoff. Strange to me. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, look, we haven't had a Texas House speaker pulled into a runoff in the primary since the Sharpstown scandal of the 70s. And so the earthquake was not just that Abbott had a great night and that he moved a very large number of the votes he needed for the school choice effort, but it was also the speaker result. Look, this is going to have massive implications the rest of this year, certainly throughout the primary runoff as we see who wins and who loses. But then beyond that, it's going to have massive ramifications as we, figure out who our new speaker is going to be, if it's going to be new. Look, Phelan could win the runoff. It is possible. I think it's less likely than likely, but it is possible. And if he does, then he's going to have to rebuild his coalition to try to get 76 votes again, become speaker again. And I think that's probably in question now, given the way everything played out. But yes, you had millions of dollars spent on both sides. And this for the speaker, this came down to, on his side, he was arguing, look, the House is more conservative than it's ever been. We got a lot of big things done. I'm representing Southeast Texas. No one's ever been speaker from Southeast Texas. You had Governor Rick Perry, a number of other people endorse him. On the other side, you had not the governor. He did not get involved in that race, but you did have the lieutenant governor, Dan Patrick, who remains popular and is a significant figure in our state, Attorney General Ken Paxton, and a number of outside groups and conservative groups fueled by the grassroots. And the anger about the speaker, you know, goes to a couple things. It goes to school choice, which he has not been publicly supportive of. I think he's been open to allowing votes, but not publicly supportive of. I think if he were publicly supportive, I suspect it would probably have passed the House. So it's that. It's also the fact that
recording in progress.
It's also the tradition that that speakers appoint committee chairs from the other party, which is a long tradition in the Texas House. I think this last session he had 7 Democratic chairs, which was down from previous years, but it's still a large number. That's something the grassroots has a really tough time understanding, because Democratic chairs don't share our priorities. They're not bound by our platform. They're not coming to our club meetings and our party meetings and things like that. Now, that is a power-sharing agreement. That's part of how he gets to a majority. It's part of how he keeps the Democrats from using procedural tactics, you know, almost immediately and slowing things down halfway through rather than at the end. But that was an animating issue. And, of course, lastly was the Paxton impeachment, as you know, Jonathan. The grassroots was, I'd say, 90% against the Paxton impeachment. I opposed it in the House. I opposed it in the Senate. I watched probably 90% of that trial. I'm not here to defend every decision Ken Paxton has made in his life, although he is my friend and I think he's been a good attorney general. But fundamentally, I think our grassroots was outraged at that impeachment effort, the process that was undertaken, how it was rushed through. And then the Senate, I mean, as I said, I watched the trial and I had an open mind. If the case had been proven, I would have publicly supported that trial coming to a guilty or responsible verdict. They didn't make the case in that trial. He still has legal problems, but he now has political power, too. And I know you want to talk about how this primary worked for him. But yeah, in terms of the speaker, he is going to have a brutal 10-week period here. This is going to be a national race with $10 or $20 million spending it, all over something like 6,000 or 8,000 total votes. It's going to be incredible.
Well, that's a good way to separate that out and have people have some perspective on, yeah, I mean, how much per vote are we talking about here? We're talking with Matt Makowiak. He leads an organization called Potomac Strategy Group. I left off one of your most important titles, chairman of the Travis County Republican Party. Were you on the ballot Tuesday?
I was.
Were you opposed?
My fourth. I was unopposed.
Okay.
Tells you something about the attractiveness of the job, I guess.
Right.
I got elected in February of 2017 by executive committee for an unexpired term. Our chair at that time, James Dickey, got elected state chair.
Yeah.
So I'd been vice chair, and I've been serving since February of 2017. Most of the terms I've won election, I've been unopposed. I was opposed once last cycle, but was renominated. So, yeah, I'm excited about the work we do. It's a very Democratic county. It's the second most Democratic county in the state of Texas. But we have a lot that we do. We're engaged at the Capitol. We're engaged on election integrity. I'm really proud of the primary contract that we negotiated something around December 17th to get the strongest election integrity provisions in the history of the state of Texas, not just the history of Travis County. Yeah. And we just implemented those on the primary, including hand counting mail ballots and enabling audits and a number of other key kind of provisions that we got there we could build on for the future. So there's a lot we do through Travis County GOP. I'm excited to continue that work.
And before we lose you, though, I do want to jump back to some of the local things that you've been involved in leading. But before we get to that, a few more things on the state, on the elections, sort of, you know, at the statewide primarily. But real quick on Phelan and Covey. I mean, David Covey deserves some credit, too. And again, not just because his brother works for us, but, I mean, not anyone could be in that race and win. He's from that area. He's been involved in politics quite a bit himself. He almost became chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, so he's no novice himself. Now, a lot of attention's been paid to everybody sort of around him and supporting him, but I do think he's earned some credit, if you will, for that race. And I'm not saying you weren't giving it to him. I'm just saying a lot of discussion about that has not been talked a lot about him as a candidate. And so, you know, and sort of, you know, he showed that. I wasn't sure either how it was going to go Tuesday night. I talked to a lot of people like, oh, you know, Phelan's going to end up winning. You heard poll numbers, all this kind of stuff. And I think you're right, though, because I've talked to some other people about it. Oh, Phelan's strong on school choice. I'm like, really? Where? I'm not seeing evidence of it. Oh, no, I heard behind the scenes. And I said, perception is reality. And you're right. The perception is he is not supportive of school choice. There were time and again, particularly in the special sessions, where he had opportunities to make that clear. And I think it's, you know, it's his fault if it's the perception is what it is, because his opportunities were there and he didn't show it. And I think people have every reason or many reasons to say he's not supportive of it. And, look, Governor Abbott was asked about it. We'll see if he gets involved. He hasn't yet, but I would imagine pressure is going to be put on him, opportunities. Let's talk about Dan Patrick for a second, and then I do want to hit Paxson for just a minute. But Dan Patrick got involved in some House races, standing on that podium next to David Covey that night on Tuesday when he was moving to a runoff was Dan Patrick. Not that he's never, he's made a lot of smart moves in his career, but he made some smart moves this time on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and you pointed out how much at stake the governor had. And you're right, it was a lot, and that was a great point to make. But the lieutenant governor, by engaging in a primary against the sitting speaker, was also risking a lot. We know that the relationship between the House and the Senate is not great. It generally isn't great. It's a naturally sort of adversarial relationship. But the relationship between the two bodies and between the speaker and the lieutenant governor are about as bad as I can remember in my lifetime, and I'm 44 years old. Certainly in the modern era of Texas politics, I can't remember a worse situation. I think it's even worse than the Patrick Strauss relationship at the end. And so, it's very unusual for a lieutenant governor to endorse in any state House race, just like it's very unusual for the speaker to endorse in a Senate race. Even in a local area, it would be very unusual. Just generally is not done. In this case, lieutenant governor thought it was that important. School choice is that important. The Democratic chair issue, that important. Paxson impeachment issue, that important. And he was obviously very invested there. And you point out on Covey, look, he's a former county chair. He was head of the Texas Republican County Chairs Association. He did run for state party chair. I don't think he got that close. So I forget how that broke down, but he did run previously. And there was some chatter he might run this time as well. In the end, he decided to run for state house as a local person running against the sitting speaker of the house. That does require courage. There's no question it would require courage because, you know, you're going against someone that is very popular, at least somewhat popular, and very well known locally, would have a lot of backing locally, particularly from the business community. So there was a lot at stake, and there's going to be a lot at stake over these next 9.5 weeks, Jonathan. We're never going to see a state house race like this, probably in our lives going forward. This is going to be so high profile for one of 150 state house districts in Southeast Texas to receive the attention you're going to see over the next 9.5 weeks. It's going to be unprecedented and extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, President Trump endorsed David Covey in a state house race, right? A competitive one, obviously one that was getting a lot of attention. And now that he's got the nomination wrapped up, I imagine don't be surprised if you see a Trump visit or two between now and May in that area. I heard rumors that it was going to happen even before the primary election. So that'll be interesting and fun, if you will, to see. But yeah, I mean, Dan Patrick, I think, publicly said, or at least privately, I heard it talked about, he wasn't going to get involved in house races, and he decided to. And so kudos to him for recognizing that, and we'll see how that plays out. But he's obviously all in for David Covey. And one real quick thing on this, is it safe to say, though, that even if Phelan survives his the runoff and this challenge, that the House Republicans are definitely going to pick a new speaker? Is it safe to say, or is it still not quite yet?
Look, I think the odds of that increase significantly based on the result. I think if Phelan were to come back and be...
Oh, no, we lost. There he goes.
Sorry. Look, I think the odds of Phelan not being speaker in the next session increase, not just on the basis of the potential that he loses the runoff, but also on the basis that he can't put 76 votes together based on the result and what happened. Yeah. He also had, seven other Republican incumbents, or maybe it's eight, Jill Dutton. Or not Jill Dutton. Is it Jill Dutton? What's her name?
Brent
Money beat Jill. Yeah. Jill Dutton. I was thinking of Jill Glover. Yes. So, Jill Dutton was an incumbent for 1 month. But outside of her, you had seven other incumbent, I think, Republicans lose. And that affects, because those are votes for him for speaker. Yep. Those are part of his coalition. Right. So he's going to have to get through the runoff, show strength, and then put his coalition back together. And that is that hill did get steeper on Tuesday. No question.
Well, and a lot of Republican voters and people that are very involved with party politics are not aware of this, I've found, because it is sort of a recent rule. But the RPT platform says that the Republican has to come together as a caucus and vote and be unanimous and say, we pick one person, and then that person goes to the floor. Interesting dynamic that's still there. All right, let's talk about Paxson for just a second. He certainly got involved in a lot of races. I mean, many different races. I haven't looked to see what his sort of score sheet looks like, but certainly it appears that the winning record for Abbott and Patrick were probably higher than Paxson, but Paxson still made a few points in there. And how do you think he looks, or his influence? How does he come out of this election? He's not on the ballot, so it's not like it affects him, but how that factor plays into these runoff elections?
Yeah, look, he got three big scalps by going after three sitting members of the Court of Criminal Appeals, including the Chief Justice, all three of whom ruled in a way that not only he strongly disagrees with, I know I strongly disagreed with, I imagine almost all the grassroots strongly disagreed with, which was to take away the power to investigate voter fraud from the Attorney General, which had been a precedent for 100 years in our state, and say it's the sole discretion and the sole jurisdiction of district attorneys. Of course, as you know, Jonathan, and as your audience knows, so many of the urban district attorneys, in the four or five urban areas, have no interest at all in voter fraud. In fact, they generally probably like it because they think it benefits their side. So, that issue goes forward, and now you have all three of them did lose, and they lost pretty overwhelmingly, which is really kind of amazing. And if I recall, I think Paxton and the grassroots was really the only people involved. I don't remember the governor getting involved in that. I'm not even sure if the lieutenant governor did.
Yeah.
But certainly it was Paxton's primary, one of his major priorities. Now, he was successful 1-3-4-0 there. Well, he went after a number of the – yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I mean, in addition to that, he went after, a number of state house members. And you're right, his win-loss record was lower than Abbott and Patrick's and Trump's, no question. In fact, as an example of that, I think he went after he got behind the five challengers to the five incumbents from the Collin County area where he's from. I think four of those Republican incumbents that he opposed were successful in winning renomination. I think one of them is now in a runoff. So his record on the Texas House wasn't quite as good. But the Court of Criminal Appeals was obviously very strong, and he was supportive of John Devine, our friend, I know your friend,
yeah,
on the Supreme Court, who was in a very, very competitive, very nervous, nerve-wracking primary, and he won by about 1%, so he was renominated as well.
Yeah, and his challenger was one of my best friends in law school, Brian Walker. Okay, so, you know, anyway, I'll have a show on the rest of that, but Brian and I are still friends, but I was like, brother. Anyway, so, but R.C. Ford did endorse John Devine, and so, but just for the court, I think that was, you know, that was a good thing for him to be reelected. Trump won big on Tuesday. I mean, not a surprise that he'd win Texas, but there were a lot of other races across the country. Now Haley is out. Nikki Haley's finally dropped out, if you will. The writing was on the wall. But Trump had some influence on the elections in Texas. I mean, he got involved in some House races, maybe some Senate races. I lost track from who all he was supporting. But, you know, I think that was probably uncharacteristic. I don't know if we've seen a presidential candidate, former presidential candidate, whatever, get involved in so many races. All those little pieces, and we mentioned it first, Abbott maybe having the most influence or the biggest night. But all these things together, you know, Patrick, Paxton, and Trump, I think certainly all those little pieces led to some of the results that we have. And I think Trump was a part of it. So I think, you know, we're going to see that influence play out more. How did you see it in regards to the Trump factor?
Yeah, I agree. I think he did endorsements for the state, for the Texas House in two tranches. I want to say the first tranche was 5 and the second tranche was 12 or something like that. And he was 10-2 in the second tranche. I need to go back and look at the first tranche. I imagine he was something like, you know, 14-3 or something like that with all of his endorsements. The races they selected, I imagine that their operation was doing polling or certainly reviewing polling. They were making some smart decisions there. And it needs to be said, Trump was the single biggest factor in the speaker's primary, period. That endorsement of Covey, when it came at a time when the race was probably pretty competitive, I imagine moved that race 8 to 10 percentage points by itself. And that's, of course, now a significant factor going into the runoff. The runoffs are generally in both parties more to their base. On the Democratic side, it's going to be more progressive. On the Republican side, it's going to be more conservative. And turnout is generally lower. I think there's a chance here, Johnson, the runoff turnout might be higher given the insane amount of money that's about to be spent and the efforts to try to find voters that support one person or the other to get them out. You have the potential, I'll point out one other dynamic here. Anyone who voted in the Republican primary can vote in the Republican primary runoff. Anyone that didn't vote in either primary can vote in the Republican primary runoff. The only people who can't vote in the Republican primary runoff in that district or anywhere else are people who voted in the Democratic primary.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and we know the primary turnout was pretty low on both sides. So there's going to be an opportunity here. And whether it's known publicly or whether it's done quietly, there's going to be an opportunity to find people who didn't vote in either primary to have them support likely the speaker in the primary runoff. That could be independents, Democrats, moderate Republicans, Republicans who didn't vote in the primary the first time. That to me is going to be one of the single biggest factors, because when you look at it, the third place finisher got 10%. So, and she was against Phelan as well. So it was really, you know, there was a majority there that voted for someone other than Phelan. And that's the risk for him now. He's got to go find new voters in addition to bringing back the ones he had before.
Yeah, no, it looks like he's got a tall hill to climb. And that's why I was sort of surprised by his statement. But nonetheless, you got some big issues you're working on locally. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that, because I know you've got some big stuff coming up. You're working with Mackenzie Kelly still on that. What's the update?
Boy, we could do an hour on that, Jonathan. I'll try to do it quickly.
We'll bring you back.
Yeah, Austin as a city continues to try to follow the policies that have failed in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Portland, Seattle, Honolulu, Chicago, D.C., and New York. Because of Save Austin Now, which I co-founded with a local Democratic activist named Cleo Patricic, we've done a good job, I think, of stopping some of the very worst things that either had happened or were proposed. But it's a daily fight. Jonathan, I spend more time on Save Austin Now than I do anything else. And it's just because if there wasn't someone representing the silent majority and fighting back against the insanity on public safety, on homelessness, on transportation, on affordability, I honestly don't know where Austin would be. And so we have a 500 police officer shortage. We were at 1,800, you know, when defund took effect in 2020. We're now 1,300 officers. We don't have a police contract. We have to get that done. They're going to go back to the table. Prop B, which we passed in May of 2021 over the opposition of every, you know, Democratic official and organization in Austin, has not been enforced. So we're before the third court of appeals, looking forward to that being appealed to the Texas Supreme Court as well soon. I imagine we'll lose the third court, but I think we have a decent chance for a fair hearing at the Texas Supreme Court. And lots of other issues, too. And as you mentioned, Mackenzie's up for re-election. That's extremely important. She's the one conservative on the council. She's the one taxpayer advocate on the council. She's the strongest public safety advocate on the council. And so getting her back, and your listeners and your viewers, checking her out on her website, her campaign website, her socials, sharing her stuff. She's done a great job fighting for Austin, fighting to move the thing in the right direction. So we're delighted to partner with her, and her reelection is extremely important to us.
Okay, check out Matt Mikowiak on social media, at Matt Mikowiak. Check out his newsletter, Must Read Texas. Are the Longhorns going to make the NCAA tournament in basketball? And if they do, are they going to make a decent run?
They are going to make the tournament. I'll guarantee that, even if they lose on Saturday in their season finale at home against Oklahoma. And even if they lose in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, they will make the tournament. Their RPI and their net ratings are pretty high. They have more quad one wins than almost any but maybe five or six schools. Big 12 is the strongest conference in the country. That win they had against Texas Tech on the road was a surprise, and I think really guaranteed their victory. I'm sure Red Raider Nation didn't appreciate that victory, but Big 12 is going to get 8 or 9 teams, and Texas will probably be the 7th or 8th team. They've been maddening this year. I was at the Baylor game in Waco on Monday night, made for a late night. Yeah. They're up that whole game, and then they blow it. It's hurt. So they're really high. They're really hot. They're really cold. Hard to tell where they're going to go, but it's college basketball. It's wide open. It's going to be very interesting. March Madness, I think, could be the wildest we've seen in a very long time.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, supporting my Longhorns. We'll see how they do. Matt Mikowiak's been our guest today on the Texas Values Report. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
All right. I ran us all the way to the end of the clock because Matt has just got a wealth of information. Go to our website, txvalues.org. I'm on my way to an event in Round Rock to recap the election. We're going to be doing one in Fort Worth on March 16th. If you see value in our work, please consider a donation today for our tax-deductible work supporting faith, family, and freedom in Texas. And we'll talk to you next week on the Texas Values Report.